Are you dealing with a narcissist in your life? A person who drains you mentally, emotionally, and sometimes even physically? So if you're not sure, I have done a previous video, so check that one out, and it shows you how to identify exactly whether someone is a narcissist or whether they're just, you know, a bit of a depressive person or a bit of a negative person. There is a big difference. So check that video out, and that will step you through how to be 100% certain of whether the person in your life that you find difficult to deal with is a narcissist or not. So we're going to dive into the aspects of how to deal with those people. So in this one, we're already determined, or we have already determined, that the person is a narcissist or has narcissistic personality disorder. So, how do you deal with that then? It's not simple and it's not easy, but there are 8 techniques or tools which are highly effective, and that's what we're going to do today. So as I mentioned, the previous video shows you how to make sure that the person that you're finding it so hard to deal with, whether they are a narcissist or not. And that's important for you to know, because then you can make appropriate choices, and also moving into the future, you can hopefully avoid getting too tangled up with these people. But what we're dealing with today is, okay, well, you have a narcissist in your life. How are you going to manage, and how are you going to deal with it? So it depends. The 8 techniques and tools that I'm going to show you are highly effective and reasonably straightforward to implement. And we will go through those in a moment. But it is important to reflect on the nature of the exposure to the narcissist. Okay. So narcissists can be anywhere in any area of your life, but the kind of exposure, the longer and more prolonged the exposure to the narcissist, the greater the negative impact. So you have the brunt of the narcissist's behavior. And in that previous video, I also went through the 6 main behaviors that result from a person with NPD, everything from love bombing and gaslighting through to, triangulation and the silent treatment or aggressive outbursts. So check that one out. But the more exposure you have, the greater the impact of those kinds of toxic behaviors on you. So the people that they spend the most time with, like their intimate partner, and their children, if they have them, they're the ones that cop the biggest detriment from these behaviors and this personality disorder. And then you have like parents and siblings, because, you know, as you grow up, the narcissist usually finds an intimate partner, and it's that sort of exposure, that prolonged exposure over time. So whilst parents and siblings can be impacted by a narcissist, especially when they're all together in one household, once that narcissist leaves the household, or it could actually be the parent, but once the family members become independent, the impact kind of lessens because they are all independent and moved on and moved out. But as for the children that are sort of there with the narcissistic parent, it's not fun. As for the intimate partner, it can be a very debilitating, negative, and toxic relationship. And then as we move further out from the exposure, the time spent with the narcissist, you have like coworkers who might just think that that narcissist is, you know, an egocentric pain in the bum. And then you have friends that see them every once in a while. And as you move further and further away, the better those people think and feel about the narcissist. So if you just have an acquaintance that you might see at the gym, and sometimes you might catch up for a coffee like once every 6 months, that person will think that narcissist is fabulous because the narcissist wants them to think that, and they also have a very public face. But if you asked the intimate partner of that narcissist or the child of that narcissist what that person was like, you'd get a very different story. So the further away and the less contact that the person has with the narcissist, the better the impression of the narcissist. And the closer you are to that narcissist, the more you see the real them underneath the mask, the more you're affected by their toxic behaviors. So I think it's important to reflect on the role that you play or that the narcissist plays in your life and the kind of exposure that you have, because the tools and techniques that I will show you have varying different degrees of effectiveness, and you will use them at different times. So, you know, a intimate partner, if you have an intimate partner that is a narcissist, you may need to use several of the tools. If you have somebody that's just a friend that you see every now and then that you think is a narcissist, you may only need to use one. So it depends on the type of exposure and the length of the exposure. So let's dive into it. These are 8 techniques that will really help you to deal with the narcissist in your life. So the first one is the DEEP technique. And DEEP stands for don't personalize, don't explain, don't engage, and don't defend. So D stands for defend, E is engage, explain, and P is don't personalize. So you don't defend yourself. Because narcissists thrive on drama and attention, there tends to be a lot of arguments, okay? Now, those arguments don't have to be overt, knockdown, drag out arguments. They can be things like them insisting on their own way. And then if you don't relent, they will, you know, sulk. Okay. So it doesn't have to be the traditional argument. But they will complain about something or accuse you of something. And the best defense is no defense. Don't argue, especially if it's trivial, to prevent kind of further arguments or fueling their ego. Don't engage if they are baiting you or saying things that you know are there to sort of fish you in with the hook and the bait. Keep your responses short if you need to respond, and neutral. So, you know, non-emotional, because the more emotional you are, the more they feed off of that. Don't explain. So if you explain something or engage too much with it, it gives them more fuel to turn it back on you, to gaslight you, to project blame onto you, etc. So keep it short and sweet. And remember, don't take it personally. It's very difficult not to, because they know exactly the squishy bits and the wounds and the triggers to push. But really, that is a reflection of them and about their need to control, and not about you. The second technique is the grey rock method. And as the name suggests, you kind of take on the persona of a rock, okay? So it's being unreactive. You respond with the bare minimums. They're flat, they're not full of emotion, and they're brief. Your body language is not like all defensive and curled up, and it's not aggressive and showy or overt. You keep your body relaxed and neutral. And you might need to change the subject, okay? So if something's getting a little bit heated, or if you think, oh, this is not going in a good direction, just shift it to a neutral topic, like an upcoming event perhaps, or, you know, weather or something that's on the news, or so it's a bit of a diversion. So these techniques that I'm explaining, they're simple, but they're not easy in some ways, because if you're in the middle of something where the narcissist in your life is trying to bait you and trigger you, maybe they're doing some passive aggressiveness, maybe they're deflecting one of those traits and behaviors, gaslighting you, it's not easy to not take it personally. But it's in your best interest not to, because you will not win. Like, and getting all emotional and stressed out actually affects your own mental and physical health. So it's not that you are condoning their behavior. It's not even that you're being passive about the behavior. It is that you are choosing strategies for your own mental health and physical and emotional health. So this grey rock method works really well, but it is only short term, because after a while they cotton on to the fact that you are kind of withdrawing and dismissing them, and they don't like that, and they generally will escalate. But it's something that you can put in your toolkit and pull out when you think is appropriate. The third technique or tool is to have firm boundaries, and this is particularly difficult for people who are very highly sensitive and they're very empathic, and they just like to get along and be happy. Well, shocker and spoiler alert, that works on someone that doesn't have NPD. But if someone is a narcissist, that's not going to work, because they thrive on attention, praise, and drama. So you need to put these boundaries in. They are hard to do at first, but kind of like when you go to the gym, you don't expect to lift a set of weights and then have muscles like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? It's built up over time. So you need to put the boundaries in and you need to stick to them. So we've identified that that person is narcissistic, so we need to establish clear non-negotiable boundaries for behavior. And you need to specify what is considered acceptable to you. Like ringing me at 2 a.m. in the morning because you can't sleep, if that's your friend, is not acceptable, right? You can talk to them the next day. You can talk to them prior to them going to bed. But 2 a.m. just because they feel like it is not an acceptable behavior. Use I statements to express feelings to prevent arguments and also misinterpretation. So, for example, using that one that I had just mentioned, I don't like you ringing at 2 a.m. because it interrupts my sleep and I find it very hard to get back to sleep. I am quite happy to talk to you before you go to bed or sometime in the morning after 7 a.m. Apply the consequences. So you could say, if you try to ring again, I will not be answering. And see how that goes, okay, or whatever the situation is. So when they know that there are consequences, they're going to push it to see if you're going to do them. And if you don't, you're teaching them that, you know, what you say that you'll put up with or you won't put up with is just words, because you're not backing it up. So when they do infringe the boundary, and they will, because they think they're entitled and that rules don't apply to them, you need to consistently apply the consequence. For example, if you yell at me like that, I will be ending the conversation and leaving. And so when they start yelling at you, you don't just sit there and, you know, continue to try and work through it. You go, this conversation is now finished because you're yelling and I'm leaving. If you need to, draw up some rules, right? It depends, again, going back to what I said about the role that that narcissist is playing in your life and the exposure. And then minimize the likelihood of breaking the rules by having that document, or perhaps having some conversations or praising them up for not ringing at 2 a.m. or whatever it is to reduce the likelihood of breaking that rule. The next technique is self-care, and this is also difficult for people who are highly sensitive and they're empathic and they love to be in relationships and they love to support people. Please remember that you also have to support yourself, particularly if you're in a relationship to someone with NPD, because they are takers, not givers, and you will be absolutely drained to the last cell. So self-care looks different to everybody, but maybe join a support group, okay? You don't need to tell the narcissist in your life that you have, or go it to a professional like a therapist. Certainly journal if it's safe for you to do so and that person's not going to, you know, read all your stuff, of course. Or, you know, exercise is really good, and especially going into nature. Nature is medicine. You know, there's something grounding, there's something peaceful. And make sure you do it on your own, not taking the narcissist with you, because it will defeat the whole purpose of caring for yourself. But make sure you do it, and do it regularly in order to keep your sanity. Manage your expectations. This is a big one. As I have mentioned in my blogs and in the previous video about narcissism, I have experienced the short, sharp, pointy end of a couple of people with NPD, and it is one of the most difficult things I've ever experienced. But one of the things that kept me in that loop for a little while was that I was always looking at the bright side of things and always thinking that everything's figure outable and everyone can change. And I came to a bitter, bitter realization that I had to swallow, and that is that some people don't change. Okay. So manage the expectations. This kept me stuck for quite a while. They're unlikely to change, if at all. Okay. And they will not apologize. And if they do, it's usually because they're trying to get something, keep you there, get something from you later. Again, look at that previous video, and I go through all of these behaviors and motivations. So you just have to choose peace. And that's what I ended up doing, choosing peace over trying to change someone and even help them. Like, I had the bit of the savior complex of like my positive attitude and the kinds of things that I can do and the kinds of support that I can give and the type of person that I am will help them, and they will start to learn and grow and become self-aware and self-reflect and become happier. And it didn't work. And that is because somebody needs to be able to change themselves. They need to be able to see that they need to change, and they need to be able to want to change, to have that desire to change. And people with NPD do not, because they don't think that there's anything wrong with them. And in fact, they think that they're absolutely fabulous, and anything that is wrong in the world and with, you know, the situation is because of other people. So please manage those expectations. Number six is no contact. This is a very, very difficult one because it's so permanent. Okay, the other ones you can use, you can pull out of your toolkit, you can use them for people in various roles in your life and different levels of exposure, but no contact is very, very hard. Okay, and it is really hard for people that you love them, you want to see them thrive, you want to see a different outcome for them, you don't want to see the chaos, you don't want to see kind of beneath the mask of their loneliness and their paranoia and their insecurity. You don't want that kind of life for them. Okay. And that's why you hang in there, and that's why you keep trying. And that's why you keep doing different tools as well, not just the tools I'm showing you, but, you know, your own personal tools in your toolkit. And it's heartbreaking. It's like a death. You grieve it because it is not something that you wanted to do, but something that you were forced to do to save your own self, okay, your own mental or emotional or physical or spiritual health, right? So going no contact is when the relationship is so toxic, it is really, really affecting you. So you need to cut all ties. That's why it's so difficult. It's not like you can pop back in and pop your toe in the water and see if it's okay again. Because you've done that, you've kind of tried to break away a little bit and they just reel you back in. Or when you think, I'll give it another go, their boundaries are all, they're all over you like white on rice, and all the same crap happens over again, right? So no contact means no contact. You block their phone calls, their emails, you don't contact them on social media, you don't respond to them. You have to prepare yourself that they'll probably employ the love bombing method again to try and win you back. Or conversely, if they know that you are resolute and that you're not coming back, it is a smear campaign of epic proportions. They will triangulate other people. They will tell them all these false stories. They will use themselves as the victim. They'll tell people that you were hideous to them. Oftentimes, all the things they're telling people that you've done to them is the exact things that they've done to you, and they're projecting, right? But you have to prepare for that. And some people will believe them. So you need to lean on some support of people that you trust, whether that's a therapist or a beloved family member or a friend, whatever support network, because after a while, after the grieving, and because you know your conscience is clear and that you've used every tool at your disposal, including the ones that I have shown you now, you feel okay over time and you know you did the right thing. But make no mistake, it is difficult to do. Communication with the narcissist, okay? So you want to start to be more proactive about it and less reactive for two reasons. One, when you're reactive, you get all stressed. The terrible chemicals get released. Your body suffers, your mind suffers. So mainly for you, but also the second reason is that the more reactive you are, the more they love it. They feed off that because they think, haha, like I've pushed the buttons and I'm controlling them. I've pulled the strings and there the little puppet goes, right? So you don't want to buy into that or feed that or enable the bad behavior. So you may need to write some things down that are like almost canned responses, automated responses, so that you can, steer the conversations in the right direction. You may want to limit topics. The more information that you add to the scenario, the more ammunition you're giving them to project at you, to, belittle you, to turn it on you, to gaslight you, right? So keep it on topic, short and sweet. If you can, especially if you're talking about something that's important, whether it be like a business decision or, a big family decision or a health decision, whatever topic it is, as long as it's not trivial and inconsequential, perhaps bring somebody there to witness it, because they will turn it against you and gaslight you. And at least you've got somebody there to go, no, no, that's exactly what you said. Okay. Or that's exactly what she said or he said. So I was there and I heard it, right? So that no miscommunication or manipulation can occur. And then, of course, avoid, arguments, because you'll never win them. Even if you have a whole raft of 100% facts and a whole filing cabinet of receipts, they will not care, because in their mind, they're never wrong and you are always wrong. Safeguards. This is the last tool. Sometimes, despite all your best efforts and using the techniques that I've shown you and then some, ones that you've already made up and invented because you had to, you need to have a safeguard depending upon the role that the person plays in your life. If it's a business partner, you best be making sure that you've got your documentation and your legal stuff sorted, your financial and legal stuff sorted, and that you've got an accountant and you've got a financial person in your team and a solicitor that you have established relationships with and that you have made clear understandings about the situation with. Otherwise, you don't have any kind of backstops or support or witnesses, and the whole thing will go to hell in a handbasket very, very quickly. If it is a romantic partner, and depending on the intensity of their NPD as well, whether they've got just like 5 or 6 traits or whether they've got the whole 9 traits and their personal intensity and level, you may need to take out some sort of restraining orders or aggravated, AVO orders or that sort of thing. Hopefully not, but it happens on the regular, okay? And it may be just a term of mediation, that you might need, whether that be again, a business relationship, whether that is like marriage counseling or mediation, you need some safeguards, because if you've tried all those other things, maybe the no contact, but if you've tried all the other tools, you may need these particular things. And it is quite common to hear of people breaking these kind of restraining orders and breaking, you know, saying something in mediation, then backflipping on it as if they never said it, or, you know, having the solicitor have to serve them with something because they don't have the boundaries, right? The rules don't apply to them, and they feel like that, you know, they're entitled to do whatever they like, whenever they like. So going no contact can sometimes trigger these safeguards to be put into place. So please make sure that you are thinking about these if you need to, depending upon the role that the person plays in your life. So some final thoughts on this. So depending upon the role, you need to assess that role. You have to evaluate, well, how much exposure do I have to this narcissist? Then select the appropriate technique or techniques that you're going to employ, and then implement them. Then evaluate how effective it was. Okay, it might be effective and, you know, you keep it up and it's all good. You may implement them and the person is still like a bull in a china shop and doesn't reflect, doesn't help. Their boundaries are still terrible. You make adjustments, and it might be that you employ the previous techniques and then you do have to go no contact. It depends on the role and the exposure and the kind of level of intensity of the particular narcissist themselves, okay? But I hope that these 8 tools and techniques have helped you. I know that they helped me through some very bad and traumatizing parts of my life. And I'm happy to say that implementing them helped support me and manage me. And yeah, and then I've come out the other side. So that's what I would like for you. There are solutions to it, and I hope that these work really well for you. Until next time, let's make the rest of our life the very best of our life.